being persistent, consistent, patient has not only driven our e-com business and the traffic to our e-com business, but actually, interestingly, it's driven our B2B business.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. Me and the team get so much joy when we see our listeners raving about us on social or in lists or blogs that it's only fair to repay that joy by giving a lovely shout out to the person who was kind enough to shout out about us in the first place. So, Sally Lloyd from Tepio, it's your turn. Thank you so much for saying lovely things about this podcast on LinkedIn. You were saying that you've recently started a 90-minute commute and you've started listening to our show to help those miles fly by. So I hope we haven't caused you any driving issues by reading out your name. And I hope you like this episode just as much as you've been enjoying the rest of the show. So thank you, Sally Lloyd from Tepio. We really appreciate you listening. In this episode, we are talking to the founder of a business that is super niche. They sell products for goalkeepers, not the whole of football or soccer, depending on where you are in the world, but for goalkeepers. And they have built the business to have almost a third wholesale sales, a third Amazon sales, and a third Shopify sales. And he'll be talking through how they went about growing it to the size it is, capitalizing across that niche, really dominating that niche in which they are in, some amazing wins they've had, how they do all this with a team of just five, and a whole load of other really fascinating stuff. This is a listen to twice episode. I'm warning you in advance. And make sure you listen to the end of the show because, quite frankly, Paul's top tips, I thought he was an awesome guest. And then we got to the top tips and he went to another level. So make sure you listen right to the end of this one, everybody. Okay, enjoy.
If your tech stack is becoming a bottleneck to growth, it's time to replatform, and you should check out Shopline. Shopline is the modern commerce platform that's disrupting Europe as one of Asia's leading e-commerce platforms. Whether your bottleneck is setting up more sales channels like social commerce or expanding to new markets globally, Shopline takes care of everything from store setups, checkouts and payments to logistics and more. With single-click migration and out-of-the-box tools, they're there to help. The best part about it, you don't need to pay until your site is live. Here in the UK, they power brands like In The Style and Everything £5, whilst in Asia, they're the platform of choice for huge brands like Lego and Muji. If you want to scale, it's time to book your free trial or have a chat with one of the Shopline team. Find out what Shopline could do for you via ecmp.info/Shopline. That's ecmp.info/Shopline.
Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organise the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook. And now to introduce our special guest. Paul Sherritt is the founder and CEO of Glove Glue, a global sports brand that specialises in goalkeeper products and services. Founded in 2010, they now sell via their Shopify store, marketplaces and wholesale. In 2023, Glove Glue sold to over 80 countries, growing at 45% year on year and with annual sales on track for 2.5 million in total, with 20% via the e-commerce store alone. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Chloe, how are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on the show. The glove glue story is a fascinating one. Yet, I believe your e-commerce journey may have started a little bit earlier than that. So how did you get started in e-commerce?
It did. I might be giving my age away here, but would you believe I was actually involved in the height of the dot-com boom. So 1999, I was in the sporting goods industry then and have been for 30 years. Got approached by a guy who was pulling together a management team, three of us, and we hooked up with two 26-year-olds that had raised 25 million quid on the AIM market because lots of people were throwing lots of money at e-com at the time. And these two 25-year-olds were actually Manchester University graduates or UMIST graduates, and they had the ability to build websites. And they were charging about 150K a time to build said websites. So they invested in us and about 20 other companies, and we launched sweatband.com, which was the UK's first multi-sport website. Roll forward 12 months, and we'd gone from zero to over a million in the first year. Pretty much every other company that they invested in fell over, as did their core business, because people suddenly realized, actually, it doesn't cost 150 grand to build a website. So during that period, 2-3 years, together with that business, we ultimately grew Sweatband and grew an affiliate future, which was part of the business. It was the classic, everything you read about, it's pizzas, deliveries and massages in the office and all sorts of kind of wonderful things, table football in the corner and all that sort of boo.com stuff that that you may have read about. It all happened. So yeah, that's what, 23, 24 years ago.
I mean, the audience can't see this, but behind me is the book Boohoo about the boo.com nightmare.
It's also behind me as well.
I still believe that's required reading for anyone in e-commerce, because part of it you're reading, oh my God, they tried to do what? I wouldn't even attempt that now. And other times you're going, whoa, just the empathy you feel for them, but also the crazy you feel for them. Essential reading.
If anybody doesn't, as you say, if anybody doesn't know that story, go and read it. The other one that I really, really vividly remember was there was a startup called Urban Fetch. And what Urban Fetch did is they allowed you to order anything and they would deliver it to your desk. So we sat in the office and ordered cans of Coke and Mars bars and so on and so forth. Clearly at that stage, the business model fell over. But where are we today? We are able to order a Mars bar and a can of Coke and so on to our desk. It's taken 20 plus years for somebody to find the right business model, but absolutely remember that one vividly.
Yeah, it's kind of mad thinking back to some of the stuff that was possible then, but kind of is only just actually possible now in any sane way.
Completely, completely.
So Paul, you had that crazy experience in the late 90s, early 2000s. How did you come back to e-commerce and found glove glue?
E-com wasn't the first play within glove glue. So glove glue came from an idea back in 2010, 2011, where my business at the time was working with multiple sports brands, predominantly based in Europe, where I was representing them in the UK and Ireland. I had a team of sales guys, sales agents, customer care, credit control, basically servicing the UK market, basically servicing sports shops. And one of my clients was a goalkeeping brand, big goalkeeping brand called Ullsport, a German brand. And I sat on their global product development board, and we talked obsessively about trying to make goalkeeper gloves grippy through latex, through improving the latex. Goalkeeper glove palms are made of latex. I thought maybe there was a better way, a better way to approach this, and came up with the idea of a spray that you could spray on any level of goalkeeping gloves to make them grippy. Because my contacts at the time were basically trade contacts, the first play, or the first phase of the business development was a B2B phase, both from a UK and from a global point of view with the contacts that we had. So e-com was probably 3 or 4 years before we launched a little bit of a clunky WordPress site in 2015, 2016, probably. Love going back in the time machine and finding those sites, snapshots of those sites. Didn't really do very much and ticked along. It was only until really I started to focus fully. I divested all those other business interests in 2019, 2020, started to focus fully on the glove glue business as a full-time gig for me, and really started to look at e-com, moved to a Shopify platform. And so it's the last 3 years properly we've scaled and have focused on building the e-com. side of the business, which, as you said at the top of the pod, is about 20% of our business now, and that's growing very, very rapidly for us as we continue to focus on e-com, as do many of the big hitters in my industry and many other industries. You know, Nike and Adidas now, the two Goliaths in my industry, over 50% of their global business is direct to consumer. So we're all heading in that direction. So, you know, we're just trying to play the game better from an e-com point of view than we did.
I'm going to go back to you kicking off with the trade selling on day one, because I think so often people with startup ideas and all the rest of it feel like they have to do something different for some unknown reason to take that product to market. You know, like I frequently will speak to someone and say, oh, yeah, I've got background in PR, but we're trying to do Facebook ads. Have you done any PR? No, we haven't done any PR. I was like, well, why? It's like, so I think it's so sensible that you went, right, we've got these contacts in this world, why wouldn't we use that? And then we add the additional channels on each time. So what was the catalyst to deciding now's the time to add the marketplaces channel and then the e-commerce channel? Was it we need more sales? Was it now where the team is ready to open another can of worms?
I think a combination of all of the above. I think technology has moved on. If you look at Shopify, just by itself, the way that that platform has evolved in the last certainly 10 years, but certainly the last 5 years, has made it very easy to push products to multiple marketplaces and to kind of embrace that whole ecosystem. So it's relatively seamless to do that now. So I think that was definitely one of the drivers. We have representation in about 44 countries around the world from a wholesale and distribution point of view. So we're starting to, we've pretty much filled up, if you like, most of the core parts of the world in terms of making us a truly global brand and having those B2B partners. So the B2C play, the e-com play for us, was to reinforce and to give people a destination from, particularly from our social activity. So we really aggressively started with social media about 3 years ago properly. And, you know, we now have over 1 million followers across social platforms. So sort of 850,000 TikTok and 160,000 YouTube, 45,000 Instagram. So, you know, where do you send those customers? Yeah, we can send those consumers to our B2B customers, but actually it's way more beneficial, of course, to send them to us, because there's no dilution of brand. There's no dilution of message. They're going to see the entire product range on GloveGlue.com. So it all comes hand in hand, really. Have to have a strong social platform, have to have a strong e-com platform. The two work together.
So, Paul, I'm chatting with you, but I'm guessing there's more than just you doing all of this at GloveGlue. So what does your team look like, and is there anything you're outsourcing?
So the core team is pretty small. There's five of us. So we produce our core product in-house. So we have a production facility that we invested a six-figure sum in 2 years ago. So we have two people pretty much full-time in the production facility. We then have customer care, marketing, and ops. We use agencies for our marketplace, for our Amazon activity. We use agencies for Google Ads, for Meta. We have a design agency where it's really our sort of creative director. He's self-employed. I've worked with him for 25 plus years. So he gets me. He understands me. He was right at the start of the brand, helped develop and the brand and the logo and the identity and the CI and everything around that. So we're lucky. We don't need to necessarily drive the business by building a big team. We'll outsource pick and pack to 3PL this year. That is one area where we recognize, as we continue to scale aggressively, we're seeing big peaks in Q4, and therefore option A is to try and find short-term labor for Q4, where we're very rural, we're in the middle of nowhere, it's quite hard to recruit. Or option B is to move to 3PL. So we're opting for option B. It's one of the big projects for us this year. So I don't necessarily see headcount having to or being forced to increase dramatically as we continue to scale.
Okay. Intriguing question now, because I'm intrigued. The move to a 3PL, totally get that as being a sensible move. Are you doing the whole of your pick, pack and dispatch to them, or are you going to keep the wholesale or keep the marketplaces, or is the everything going over?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. So the core of our products are produced in-house. We produce them in-house. We're shipping pallets, multiple cartons, et cetera, to our B2B wholesale distribution customers. It makes no sense to push that element of the business into 3PL. So our 3PL will literally be the B2C side of the business. So we view it that instead of sending a pallet to Australia, we'll simply send the pallet into our 3PL. So it fits in quite nicely with our B2B play, really. Marketplace, at this moment in time, we're transitioning. We've got a bit of a multiple. We're in vendor, Amazon vendor and Amazon FBA at the moment. We'll come out of vendor, push everything into FBA. It may be, the US, for example, is a big marketplace for us. We've just picked up Dick's Sporting Goods in the US, which is the world's biggest sports retailer. They have 900 stores. We already have a strong soccer specialty presence in the US. It may be that a 3PL in the US that serves marketplaces B2B and B2C is logical, but within the next 2 years. But at this moment in time, it's a B2C play only, predominantly looking at a UK-based warehouse.
Yeah, and let's learn how to outsource to a 3PL in our own country before we try and do it on the other side of the pond.
It's really tempting when you've got other really big marketplaces and you're kind of going, oh, it'd be good to have some stock in there. I mean, US is a classic, it takes, we can get product there in 5 to 7 days. Well, what the US mentality is, we want it tomorrow.
Yeah, and congrats on the Dick's Sporting Goods contract. That must have been a big win.
It was, thank you, it was.
Huge opportunity there. And tell us a little bit more about the products. We've kind of alluded to it, but we've not gone deep into what it is you're manufacturing.
Yeah, so the course of 50% of global revenue is our star product, our flagship product. So it's a spray to make your goalkeeping gloves grippy. Who knew? And yeah, so it's as simple as that. Basically, we've created a category that didn't exist before in and around that product. So we now have three core areas of our product range. So that's products to make your gloves grippy. So the three different versions of, so Glove Glue Original, which was our first product, Glove Glue Mega Grip, which is 25% stronger, and Glove Glue Aqua Grip for wet weather conditions. So that's our sort of make them grippy category or revive. So then we have the wash category. We've got multiple products within the wash category to clean your gloves, get rid of all the grit, make them last longer, make them perform better, various iterations in there, chemical-based, but also things like sponges and towels and so on. So that's our wash category. And then we have this refresh or stop them smelling category. So stinky gloves, people wear them, they don't look after them, they've had a sweaty session, they throw them in their bag, and they come back for a session a week later. Not pleasant. So we have a load of anti-odor products for boots and for gloves that sit in that refresh category. So fundamentally, that product range, the goalkeeper glove care range, that's what's really driven our business into global, initially soccer specialty retailers, but now more and more into sports multiple retailers. So I mentioned Dick's. We've also had a huge win last week. We've picked up Rebel Sports, 190 stores in Australia. So these guys, the sports retailers, are seeing the accessory driven product with good margins, no sizes, product doesn't really change, is really, really attractive for them. It simply becomes a never out of stock product range. And if they place it in the right position, it's upsell, cross-sell, classic product. So for every 10 people that buy a pair of goalkeeper gloves, 3, 4, 5 buy a Glove Glue product, which is perfect for in-store, perfect for e-com.
And you're in such a strange niche, a surprising niche, one that people probably wouldn't have even realised existed, that you've created. Do you think you could have created the domination globally that you've done if you started e-commerce first? Because I suspect going trade first has taken you much further, much quicker.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The route in through soccer specialty stores, both standalone stores and e-com, meant with this upsell, cross-sell strategy, meant that in the early years, those guys were effectively doing the marketing for us because they were presenting Glove Glue products at checkout. Nobody's going to search for a product that they didn't know existed. Suddenly they're presented with something that says, oh, okay, I never knew there was a product to make my gloves grippy or stop them smelling or keep them clean. They did a lot of that work for us in a way that it would have been probably expensive for us to try and do that ourselves. And as I say, even today, the amount of traffic in terms of people, the amount of Google traffic with people specifically searching for a product to make their gloves grippy, sticky, is very, very low. If we had $1 million Google Ads budget monthly, we'd never be able to actually spend it based on those search terms, because there simply isn't the search traffic for those terms. So it is all about putting it in front of people, which is why B2C through our, or B2B through our partners there worked, and it's why social works, because, and social ads work, because we can tell people, hey, here is something that exists.
The piece about the, you know, the big retail stores and the sports stores is those managers and the sales team are constantly targeted to increase average transaction value. Endlessly targeted with increasing transaction value. And if you've got a no-brainer of a product that every time a pair of goalkeeper gloves gets sold, or even a goalkeeper comes in to buy new boots and you can upsell them this no-brainer product for them that not only is a no-brainer, but it's also you're going to run out and you're going to have to come back for more. It's an easy sell to the buying team. It's an easy sell to the store staff. It's not, it's kind of one of those marvelous circles of virtue where everybody's winning.
It's the classic, it's the shoe shop sell. You know, if you go into a shoe shop, do you want an insole, or do you want a product to stop your shoes smelling, or do you want a product to, I don't know, buff your suede or whiten your trainers or whatever it is? It's that classic sell. I think it's one of the reasons why we're so successful in the US, because the US, the Americans are really good at this. They're really good in store. We're a bit shy here. We're not so great. There are some high street retailers that train their staff quite well, but fundamentally we're not great at that pushy side of sales, that upsell, cross-sell. Our US customers really are. And they know, if they ask the question every time they sell a pair of gloves, they know what the conversion rates will be. And it's something that we use from a selling point of view. We can pretty much tell a retailer, and it's the reason we landed Dick's, for example, we can tell them pretty much how many products, based on we know how many gloves they sell, we can tell them how many products they're going to sell, how frequently they're going to sell them. We're taking up really small space, so we can tell them the return per square foot. So we're giving them the answers. So there's no reason for them not to stock the product, really. Even though, as you say, you know, you go back 10 years and you go, what? There's no way you can build a multi-million pound business in the niche of goalkeeping sprays that make your gloves grippy. But here we are, and we're on the journey towards ultimately an eight figure business, still in this niche.
And how difficult, I was going to ask you something else, but you said about still being in this niche. And I'm like, so I'm going to ask the question I've been kind of like thinking, well, should I, shouldn't I ask it? Is how tempting is it to create a pair of goalie gloves? How tempting is it to expand into, I don't know, cricket wicket keepers sprays? How do you decide there's still enough space in this niche and it's still worth continuing to focus in this one relatively small space in the sporting space, rather than, you know, extrapolate outwards, which I'm sure you've got people going, you should expand and go into other areas. How do you continue to make whatever the right decision is for Glove Glue on that front?
Possibly one of the hardest things that one does as an entrepreneur, because the brain is going a million miles an hour. It'll probably come as a surprise to you. COVID was a massive help in this situation. I'll tell you why. Pre-COVID, the business plan, the strategic document that I had written, said that we'll take this grippy spray that we have in football goalkeeping, and we'll roll it out into other glove-wearing sports around the world. I think American football, baseball, hockey, lacrosse, etc. I had a lot of time to think during lockdown, as we all did. At the time, let's say we had, you know, we already had a global business. We already had retailers that were buying goalkeeper, soccer specialty retailers that were buying products from us. Maybe they were buying 4 products, 5 products, 6 products. My thought process was as follows. Option A, I go to Dave, who owns a baseball shop in Chicago, and say, Dave, I've got a new spray. It's Glove Glue for baseball. Well, first of all, Dave's never heard of Glove Glue. And secondly, Dave might go, do you know what? Okay, maybe I'll buy it. So Dave buys 1 product. Option B is we spend the time during lockdown to broaden our product range into a wider range of goalkeeping products. And maybe we go to our existing customers and say, thank you for buying 5, 6 products from us at the moment. We've got another 20 that we'd like to sell to you. So they come back and go, okay, well, we'll buy 4 or 5 of those. And maybe we'll buy 6 of those. Option B, we've doubled our business relatively easily, because we've already got a connection and we're just presenting new products to our existing customer who we have a relationship with. Option A, hard slog. And guess what? option A actually doesn't go away. So it's still in our strategic plan that the opportunity hasn't gone away. But at this moment in time, you know, as we said, we're growing at 45% year on year. We can see the growth opportunities to continue at pace for the next three to five years on that strategy. So it's really difficult. Entrepreneurs get distracted. I have to keep telling myself and my team keep telling me, no, let's just keep it simple. Let's just really focus on this niche. And in fact, we've gone from going quite wide and deep with our goalkeeping glove offer to starting to come back in and look at the two key product areas, one of which we, in inverted commas, own, which is goalkeeping glove care, and we created that category. We're category king. And the other is goalkeeping gloves, because we can get in through the back door into our customers. It's a highly competitive marketplace, but we can get products listed. We can get goalkeeping gloves listed. And the size of the goalkeeping glove market is a market size that we already know. It's already established, and we know we can take a slice of that because of the brand equity that we have within Glove Glue. So it's a great question. And of course, my brain's now going, oh, Chloe said we should be looking at other sports. And but no, let's keep focused.
Okay, well, we're going into the top tips now, but I have to say, I would stay focused too. Life is short. Take the easy route. Why not?
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
If your tech stack is becoming a bottleneck to growth, it's time to replatform, and you should check out Shopline. Shopline is the modern commerce platform that's disrupting Europe as one of Asia's leading e-commerce platforms. Whether your bottleneck is setting up more sales channels like social commerce or expanding to new markets globally, Shopline takes care of everything from store setups, checkouts and payments to logistics and more. With single-click migration and out-of-the-box tools, they're there to help. The best part about it? You don't need to pay until your site is live. Here in the UK, they power brands like In The Style and Everything £5, whilst in Asia, they're the platform of choice for huge brands like Lego and Muji. If you want to scale, it's time to book your free trial or have a chat with one of the Shopline team. Find out what Shopline could do for you via ecmp.info/Shopline. That's ecmp.info/Shopline.
Have you yet downloaded our ebook? To celebrate reaching episode 500, we've created an epic e-commerce success-focused ebook for you, packed with 500 top tips about how to make your e-commerce store more profitable, featuring the advice of many, many past guests alongside industry experts and many of you as well, our listeners. I've checked every single tip and organize the whole thing into sections for you, making it super easy to dip in and dip out and take inspiration as and when you need it. This ebook needs to be sat on your desktop or even printed and sat on your desk. Download your free copy right now at ecmp.info/ebook. Get 2024's most valuable e-commerce ebook now, ecmp.info/ebook.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, as you all know, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Paul, are you ready for the top tips?
Let's go.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Well, your listeners can't see this. You can. You can see behind me there's a bookcase full of business books. We alluded to it earlier with our Boohoo books. So I just love business biographies. I just love anything about business. I love anything about entrepreneurship. So it's been a difficult one for me, this. I'm probably slightly biased with the book I'm going to recommend, but Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. There is so much in that that resonates with me and my business journey, but also there's so much that resonates right across building a business generally, and e-com, and building a brand with innovation, inspiration, creativity, bootstrapping a business for a while, changing the game in terms of the way that Nike dealt with athletes. And maybe there's an analogy today in terms of the way that people are dealing and using influencers. I can read that book over and over again. It's not just about a Shoe Dog and Nike. It really has some way broader business tips within there.
A very compelling recommendation. And I would describe your bookcase as groaning with business books. There's a lot there. A whole library, one might even say. The traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
So I think for us, I alluded to it earlier, we're incredibly lucky that we get a lot of organic traffic now. And that organic traffic comes from our social media. And this is not paid, this is organic social media. So the time, effort, energy that we've put in that, being persistent, consistent, patient, has not only driven our e-com business and the traffic to our e-com business, but actually, interestingly, it's driven our B2B business. Why? Well, because what happens is a TikToker in South America sees a product that he's never seen before. Guess what? That guy owns a sports shop in Brazil. Contacts us, we start supplying sports shop in Brazil. His competitor, the number two, the number three, the number four sports shops, soccer shop in Brazil, sees what the competitor does and also contacts us. And we've had it multiple times where we've got these pockets around the world and we're pretty sure they've been driven by social media, because we're not necessarily targeting Bolivia to try and find a new customer base in Bolivia, a B2B customer base. So top traffic tip for us, it's social, because not only does it drive B2C, it also drives B2B traffic and business for us as well.
Well, and on the organic side, it is one of those truly global things. To try and restrict an organic TikTok post or LinkedIn post to just your country is something that could drive you insane. So yeah, a big global play there too. Right, the tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
There is, and we introduced this about 12 months ago, and we use it across all elements of the business, and it's Trello. And we use Trello boards for everything. So I'll give you some examples. We use Trello boards for the pathways for our new product development, because that pulls in, as I said, our creative director who's external, pulls in the marketing guys, it pulls in the ops teams. So that really allows us to map out our product development pathway. We use it every single day for our production planning. So again, we can see within that what needs to be done today, what needs to be produced today, what orders that ties into, and so on and so forth. We use it from a brainstorming point of view. So we'll create Trello boards that are, and again, for me, I'll wake up in the middle of the night with an idea and hopefully it's still in my head in the morning. I probably should have a piece of paper next to the bed, but I'll come down in the morning and I'll dump it into my Trello board and it will be there. It will be there to be visited at a later date in time. It's there. We use a lot of Google Docs. We can link Google Docs in there. We can link imagery in there. It's a really, really great tool for us that has just made us A, more efficient, and B, way more collaborative as a team.
Love that recommendation, especially the examples. I think Trello is one of those tools which, like most of the project management tools, unless you put some stuff into it, it's very boring. So great to have those examples there. And then the carbon top tip. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
So the easy one for us that we introduced probably about 3 years ago was signing up to Ecology. So we try as best we can. We pay a monthly fee sort of for each member of staff. So we try as best we can to plant trees through Ecology to fund projects, climate change projects, and so on. We have a Glove Glue Green initiative. So again, we try to get some small gains, some Kaizen within the Glove Glue Green initiative. So whether it's recyclable packaging, our bottles of PET, they are recyclable, but we think there's probably something that we could do better ultimately in the long term as we continue to grow. So we're looking at that whole topic in terms of the PET that we're putting into the system. So we don't have all the answers at the moment. We're trying to be transparent with what we're doing. Ecology is a simple one, because at least there is some money going into funding, you know, some of the activities to reduce carbon.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of offsetting, I have to say, so long as it's not seen as a get out of jail free card.
Exactly.
Because fundamentally, we need more trees. You really can't argue against that one. You mentioned Kaizen within that, which will have had some of our audience going, what's that? Could you quickly explain what that is?
So Kaizen, small gains, marginal gains. So again, I guess the analogy for me in sport is Dave Brailsford in cycling with British Cycling. So probably going back 10, maybe 15 years ago, that he recognised that one needed to look at every single aspect of the British Cycle program. And viewers, if you can get marginal gains, a 1% gain in every single aspect of that, then cumulatively you're going to see some bigger gains. So we have it as a within the Monday team meeting. People put forward any marginal gains, any small gains, any improvements that they've seen or that they want to see. So that's something that we basically ask every member of staff to put in. And it could be anything, but it could be time saving, it could be cost saving, it could be anything to make the business more efficient. So Kaizen, I think, as a principle is really interesting for us. It's something that we're trying to embrace and trying to make sure that we can be the most efficient business that we can. The result that Dave Brailsford had was with British Cycling was that, you know, some few years later, and we continue to gain, you know, lots of Olympic medals in that sport. Other countries have caught up. They're also doing the same thing, looking at nutrition, looking at technology, looking at every element of the athlete and every element around the program. So yeah, that's Kaizen.
Excellent. And it's K-A-I-Z-E-N if anyone wants to Google it, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. There you go, guys. Think of that as a bonus top tip. Paul, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It has been truly enlightening chatting with you. So could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business, especially if they've got a goalkeeper in their family?
Gloveglue.com is the website. Right across social media, we're at Gloveglue. So TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all of the above. You can find me personally on LinkedIn, Paul Sherratt, S-H-E-R-R-A-T-T. So if you want to find me there, link into me, ask me any questions. I'm pretty active on there and pretty transparent on there. So happy to really answer anything.
Awesome. Thank you, Paul. And because we're in spelling land, I'm just going to tell you all that Glove Glue is G-L-O-V-E-G-L-U. No second E, everybody.
Nice bit of brand personality in there, dropping the E off the end.
Brilliant. Paul, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been lovely chatting with you, and I know we've given the listeners loads of good ideas. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, Chloe. Really, really enjoyed it.
What a fascinating journey Paul's been on. And I think for me, the big pieces, there was so much from what he was talking about there, but the big piece was around that part we ended on about staying focused and really looking at those opportunities and going, actually, which one's the straightforward one to take on? It is, like you said, it's a question you should constantly be asking yourself. Should we expand beyond goalkeepers? Should we expand beyond whatever your niche, your niche is? But make that move thoughtfully when it comes to doing it. I also loved that organic social advice he said about persistent, consistent and patient, and the Kaizen, continuous improvement, but democratizing it across the team. I thought, yeah, loads there from Paul. I think that's one of those episodes you're all going to need to listen to twice to get all the stuff out of it. You can get our notes to help you get all the stuff out of it from this episode, including the top tips and links to the things Paul mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast. Or you can use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode into the URL bar and you'll go straight to the correct episode page. When you get to the website, please do add yourself to our email list, because then you won't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. And if you liked this episode, then why not check out some of our other B2B episodes? If you go to ecmp.info/B2B, you'll find more tips about growing wholesale sales. Thank you so much for tuning in to this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. I hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.
If your tech stack is becoming a bottleneck to growth, it's time to replatform, and you should check out Shopline. Shopline is the modern commerce platform that's disrupting Europe as one of Asia's leading e-commerce platforms. Whether your bottleneck is setting up more sales channels like social commerce or expanding to new markets globally, Shopline takes care of everything from store setups, checkouts and payments to logistics and more. With single-click migration and out-of-the-box tools, they're there to help. The best part about it, you don't need to pay until your site is live. Here in the UK, they power brands like In The Style and Everything £5. whilst in Asia, they're the platform of choice for huge brands like Lego and Muji. If you want to scale, it's time to book your free trial or have a chat with one of the Shopline team. Find out what Shopline could do for you via ecmp.info/Shopline. That's ecmp.info/Shopline.